Let me do this furious staring ahead.
Oh, what are you staring?
It's the British contraband of Options hot chocolate that my mum posts to me.
Okay, that's going in the podcast.
What is the Bear Grylls? Adapt, improvise, overcome. That's my ethos for France.
Hello, and welcome to I Am French, with me, Karen French. 6 years ago, I packed up my life in London and I moved to rural France. It's been a challenge. This is a podcast where I talk to other non-Frenchies who've chosen to settle here in France. Each week, my guest and I will discuss the joys and challenges that come with living in a different country and share stories of our adventures in La France. Beyond the fantasy, I'm interested in the real experiences of living here, with its frustrations, wonders, and hilarity. The process of uprooting ourselves is not a small thing, and nor is putting down new roots. Here we discuss how we have each navigated this journey. This episode is brought to you by Plato Agency. If you're in the market for a new website, or if you want to refresh your current site, I can highly recommend Plato Agency. I thought I'd be able to build my website myself, but actually, I was so glad to have help, and Plato Agency were efficient, professional, and supportive at every stage. They took care of all the techie stuff, advised on SEO and optimizing everything, and even the contract was enjoyable. Yeah, the contract. And get this, my website designer is called Matt French. I swear to God, he's no relation, and I don't scour the internet for anyone called French just because it's bang on brand. I promise. So Plato Agency are offering I Am French listeners 20% off to build you a beautiful, bespoke website. For an average 10-page website, this service includes the first year of hosting, email, plus copywriting and images. Also, if you supply your own copy, they'll be even more generous. Go check out plato.agency and mention I Am French to unlock your exclusive 20% discount. Thank you very much to Plato Agency. My guest this week is Laura Harley of Frugal France. She's a writer and talking therapist who moved to France 2 years ago with her husband and cats. And now she has a dog. Oh, and chickens. We chat about why she came here and why she left England, the house she's doing up, getting on with the French language, her take on frugal living, and her new appreciation for central heating. Oh, and our mutual love of Marmite. We did a good 5 minutes on Marmite alone at the beginning, but I know Marmite isn't for everyone, so we'll get straight to it.
Tell us a little bit about how you landed in La France.
Okay, so in 2018, I moved permanently to somewhere in France. I wasn't actually here. I moved into a Jeep when I first moved over because my house purchase hadn't complete. And I left, I closed a couple of businesses and my then fiancé closed his, well, left his, I don't know how long he'd been working for his employer. We used to work together for the same employer, but I think he'd been there for like 30 plus years. Like it was a big deal, TM. And, yeah, we just packed up our lives, sold our house in Bristol and moved into a one-bedroom holiday cottage in the Creuse. And it was quite tiring, is how I would describe it. Quite a tiring process. But, it was an adventure. It was an adventure in itself. And then being here is its own different type of adventure, less tiring, but I don't know, my brain feels tired a lot these days. I think it's all the learning of the French.
I concur. It's exhausting. I used to say I'm learning French like a toddler, and now I know why they sleep so much. Literally, their brains is like tuk, 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 all day, and then they're just like, yeah, I need to sleep at five, thanks. It's tiring.
You think, I mean, I don't know, I've always loved languages, so that kind of influenced why I suppose why I would ever choose to live in another country other than the UK, but I think in French probably more than I think in English, and it's all wrong. So imagine how exhausting that is.
You mean your French in your head is wrong? It's not correct. French, you mean?
There's going to be a lot of errors in there, and then I'm sort of trying to be my own French teacher and embody my French teacher and figure out where I've gone wrong in my thinking. So I'm thinking a phrase and then I'm figuring out where I'm screwed up, and then I'm correcting myself, and then at the end I finally get to my banal thought of like, I need more eggs. But it's a really tiring process.
yeah. And if you're trying to hold a conversation, it's like, oh no, that thought was 2 minutes ago. Okay. Now it's everyone's moved on.
I mean, we speak English at home, so that is the saving grace. But
and I really
have dreamed in French for a while. Not all the time. No, like English has not been forbidden, but now I can, or my brain chooses to dream in French.
Wow.
So it's really in there.
It's great.
Yeah, that feels quite good. I mean, again, it's probably all rubbish. Like grammatically, I'm not sure it's up there, but it's going in the right direction. I mean, I've been learning French on and off since
25.
I was
5.
Since I was a child.
5 years ago. Yeah, wow. It's true. It's been drilled into us early.
Yeah, and then drank away. Like, I totally eviscerated any French knowledge I had with Jaeger bombs in my 20s. So, I had to get it back in my 30s. And I think it's that process of sort of the excavation of French knowledge from underneath the years of binge drinking in London that's been the challenge.
Yeah, yeah. So what made you go, okay, that's enough of Bristol, let's move to France?
I mean, in a word, Brexit. But
okay.
I knew that I wanted to live here, and I realised that with the changes that would come as a result of leaving the UK, leaving the EU, that I would not be able to do it as easily. And there's this, because I was self-employed previously, I was very conscious of how up and down that can be, and I just imagine that doing that, or being self-employed and having to meet even higher, more stringent income levels could be harder later. Also, like, I'm 36. There's going to be no pension for me when I get there, if I ever make it to state pension age. The idea that would be enough for me to survive on, if it even exists, when I finally got around to coming to France, I just didn't have confidence that that was going to happen in, like, 15, 20 years. So that coupled with I had a friend who had a really short illness, and she died within 6 months, and it made me acutely aware of how short life is, and I just thought, fuck it, let's go. And so we did, and unfortunately my husband is extremely patient and flexible and all the nice things, and I'm like, let's do this thing now. Well, let's buy a house in another language that we don't speak, in another country where we don't understand what the property value is, and we don't have any euro. So yeah, he's a patient guy.
He sounds great. I'm so sorry about your friend. That's hard and very quick.
Yeah.
But what a legacy to have weaved into your choice. You know, it's
I mean, I'm enormously grateful to her, because she made us both reassess our priorities, and and she's very much, as a result, she's very even more perhaps in our lives than she would have been had things been different. And I was writing about her the other day, and it was just very emotional, even remembering the decision making process, because it was just such a fraught time. The response to the Brexit vote was, for me, just a profound disappointment, and to then have grief on top of that, and like I think Graham, my husband, and I were just sort of got pissed off at the situation that we were in, our personal one and the political one. And you know, we're lucky that his children are old enough to understand that people make decisions to be far away, not because of them, but because of, you know, priorities that around having quality of life. So we've been able to be here and stay in contact, and and even, you know, with my own family, stay in contact with them. But yeah, COVID's made that a little bit harder. So
yeah, just a little. Yeah. So you're a stepmom.
Yes. Yeah. In the sense, I mean, not maybe like on paper, but actually, my husband's children are adults, so they don't need me in any way. I have nothing to offer, and that's okay.
Oh no, that's great. I mean, yeah. It's very different. I came to France and my stepson was 5 and I didn't speak French. And I'm sure he was like, who is this lady around who doesn't even speak French, but she's got an iPad? She can't even say. She doesn't understand anything. My husband would be doing all the translating, you know. But now we look back and we neither of us remember how we communicated. I do remember, though, within the first year, I was trying to read. And I try to read stories to him, and I look at his face, and I'm sure he'd look at me and think, oh, that's nice. But he sometimes would be like, do you mean this word? I was just, oh dear, bless him. He was just so sweet. He's like, no idea what you're talking about. It's like, okay.
Oh, he's just good about it.
No, he's really sweet about it, but you know. Now he's approaching teenage years and it's all kicking off. So, I mean, not really. He's lovely. It's all just, it helps, I think, being in a rural kind of countryside town. But the internet is the internet, you know. So it's all just potentially worrying.
It's really hard to live in the middle of nowhere and not use that stuff to survive, right? Because, like, I have a lot of friends who are like, don't use Amazon, it's the worst place in the world. And like, I agree, there's problems. But you cannot, like, how the fuck am I meant to get my Marmite, guys? Like,
yeah, hello.
My mum can't pay all this postage. So
even though I did Google book depository, because I was like, well, that's possible. So I've been using a bit of them, but I totally agree. When you're in the countryside and it's books, especially for me, it's books. So I do more Kindle really. So it's just online. And
I've definitely moved in. I never used to, excuse me, it's not COVID. It's just cough. I hope. I used to read paper books before, but now because I can't be asked to wait for them, I've accepted the move into Kindle and audiobooks. But they're saying that my Kindle is from like 20, okay, so my first husband bought it for me, so this is how it's aged,
first generation Kindle.
So I mean, I think I got it when I was early 20s. It was
Wow.
So that's a relic, but it works perfectly. So, you know, I'm just saw this frugal angle, right? I'm like, I'm not throwing that thing away until it fights me.
So where did the name for your brand come from? Frugal in France.
Frugal France, yeah.
Sorry, Frugal France.
Yeah, I think there is somebody called Frugal in France. I don't know who they are. I noticed loads of, interestingly, like once my Instagram started to get traction, I noticed all these iterations of my name pop up and people would like try and steal my posts and pretend to be me. I was like, guys, like, surely if anybody's going to get the 3 likes on this, I don't know, punnet of tomatoes, then it's going to be me, not you. Like, if you want to go for it, go for it. But it was very interesting. But I remember actually, so I think we just really like alliteration, my husband and I. So one of my businesses in the UK used to use it. And when I set up the account, I think I was in Limoges Airport, and I just thought, oh, this is a good way to share the pictures of the frankly horrendous houses I viewed this weekend for laughs. And the approach that we were having to house buying was very penny pinching. So it made sense. And I think we were sat at the two little steps there at the bottom of like the escalators, and anybody who's ever been through the postage stamp sized departures in Limoges airport will know them. And I made the account, and it was really good. It helped me to meet real life human people who would have known in the middle of nowhere here. And you also speak English, and that's really helpful when you first move because you don't know what you're doing. So it was a nice thing. That's how it came about. But it's the frugality angle, I suppose. This is interesting because I'm doing a lot of work around money at the moment in my business as a counsellor, and the trauma around money that people have. And I'm like, who will listen to this? Will my mum ever listen to this? I think they would agree with me, that my parents would agree with me, that we had pretty significant money trauma in our family, when certainly when I was a child. And and this that shaped me definitely as a human. And I was lucky to sort of have the privilege to be able to let that go a little bit when I worked in London, because I worked in IT. It was a very well paid career. But whenever there's a sense of scarcity, it taps into a very fearful part in me. So there's a very instinctive inclination to save money in me, and it doesn't come from a good place, right? It doesn't come from a like bargain hunting place. It comes from a fear of losing safety as a result of not having money. So I'm learning to balance that impulse with what does it mean to live a frugal life. And it doesn't, to me, doesn't mean the cheapest thing. It doesn't mean always putting up with the shittiest product. It means making sensible choices about how we live and what we choose to have around us, and being pretty analytical, I suppose, or reflective over whether we really need something. Because when I was in London, I needed everything and I had it.
You know?
Like, Addison Lee, I mean, this was pretty... they knew me. So
lead taxis, baby.
That was the future in 2012. So
now it's like Addison who? Sorry, I get my Uber.
I don't know.
They do. They do.
Okay. I mean, they were pricey, but you could book it on an app, so I was sold.
So now you're living in countryside in France, and is your house a do up thing? You're doing it up, or you did it?
Yes. Profoundly. So yeah, it's an electrician came here the other day to quote us for the I guess kind of half rewire that we want, and I said hello, welcome to our hovel, and he was like, oh okay, this is gonna be a tough job. but actually it's I think I do it down a lot, and there's some complicated stuff probably in there, like if I took it to my therapist head, I would some self-deprecating shit going on there. But I love our house. It is a pretty small what's the word in English? That's what my husband says. What's the word in English when you can't remember it?
Like, I know exactly what you mean. I just stuck in limbo between the two languages now. You're like, shit.
It's a detached, I guess at the moment, bungalow. and it has another floor upstairs, which at the moment is just absolutely spider infested. I don't know. Not uninsulated box full of weird shit that the people who lived here before left up there when they moved out. I mean, okay, good story. there's a
We were so like, there's a dead body that we're really not, you know.
No, worse. There is.
Oh, God.
There's a, when we were poking around, there's like, there's no light up there. So we were using a phone or whatever. Oh, we're poking around, and my husband opened one of the like 14 wardrobes that is up there. Like, they're super heavy. How the, why, how, who knows?
Yeah.
They're up there. And he opened the door of this wardrobe, and this creepy fucking doll fell out on him and like landed on his face. And then we both dropped our phones and we're just like convinced that this was Chucky and it with an accent. And it's just really frightening. Yeah. But worse, like that was one of them. And then later on in another part of it, we open a, there's so many suitcases out there. Open the suitcase and inside it was perfectly laid out. A walkie-talkie, I mean, random, and a doll, another doll with a swiveling head and the eyes that, like, open. And what was it? A teddy bear, like, really, like, was good.
Oh, God.
So there's just, it was just creepy. So we didn't go up there a lot at the beginning, but now, or rather, we're going to pay someone who knows what they're doing to renovate it for us, because I don't trust either of us to do it completely. We're good at decorating, and we like we've made the best of everything that we can, but I don't know how to insulate a roof, and I really don't care to learn.
No.
So I already work, so I totally get it when people you know, come over and they're maybe retired or they're early retired and they're like, oh, I can learn how to do that thing. But I work in the week, and I don't have the time, energy, or inclination to learn how to I don't know, do pointing. So, and I could. I guess I could, but I couldn't also work, and I'm not gonna stop working to do that stuff. So we found somebody who's going to hopefully help us, or two people who are going to help us realise the potential of this house, because that's what everyone says when they come over. It's got a lot of potential.
Yeah.
Which is obviously code
at the moment it's freezing in winter and boiling in the summer, but it's got a lot of potential. So your work is online, right? Can you explain what's a talking therapist?
I guess it's just another word for counselor or therapist or psychotherapist, but it's mental health therapy. So I will sometimes go to an event in my village, and I'll say, oh, I'm a therapist, and they'll be like, oh, is that essential oils, is that crystals, is it Reiki? So there's nothing wrong with those things, but that is not what I do.
No.
Like, I really can't help you, I'm so sorry. And so I talking therapy is the kind of way that I describe it, because that's what I do when I'm working with my clients, is I'm having a conversation that is aimed at alleviating the issues that they're bringing. And it's all online, and I worked online when I lived in Bristol with a mixture of face-to-face and online. And when I moved here, I just kind of took a punt. Like, I had no idea it would ever be viable, but I didn't have any other skills, and so certainly wasn't going to be a builder.
No. Or a spider worker.
No, there's no animal jobs for me. So I just sort of tried to make it work. And I brought with me, I sort of converted a lot of the people that I used to work with in Bristol or in London. And it's a horrible, like, therapists are the darkest people you'll ever meet. So, like, I'll laugh at a horrible thing and then say the horrible thing. But, like, I've never been busier. It's a horrible time for our world. And obviously,
People need help.
It's a profoundly traumatizing experience. And so, like, therapy is one of those odd businesses that is thriving as a result of the pandemic. And and I think also the move to everything being online, people working from home and getting used to Zoom and things like that, has sort of perversely got people used to the way that I work too, whereas online therapy used to be like the the poor cousin of face-to-face therapy. It is proven to work as efficiently online as it does face-to-face. So that's really reassuring to me, is that this experience, although it's been horrendous, is also in a roundabout way given me some legitimacy to my work that wasn't there before, and also allowed me to perhaps do some of the best work that I've ever done. So it's although I would never have, of course, wished for it to happen, there are some things that I'm taking from it that are not awful. So
no. I've been doing yoga classes online. I do a yin yoga, and my teacher lives in London, and her teacher, he's the senior teacher, has been doing it, you know, 45 years or whatever, and he just does retreats through the year, and then he started Zoom classes, and it's just been, you know, he's just given it a go. But actually it changes some things, because obviously he can't be in the room, and it's a physical activity. It's not just you stay there, I'll sit here, and you know. But it, you know, there's so many great things that have come of it, and it's something that we would never have thought of. Equally, I know a great acting teacher in New York who runs a conservatory, and he started to do classes online, and he's starting to put his syllabus online so that he can have students everywhere, and then you've got income coming through your virtual school, not only when you're in the room with them. So
yeah,
it's that's great. That's really great.
I think it's fantastic, because it's given lots of people who perhaps ran businesses, I'm not even talking about myself now, but people who ran businesses who were self-employed, who had perhaps really high overheads and were convinced there was only one way to work, and which would be like have an office, whatever the thing was, travel an enormous amount, like you had to I don't know what the ways that they would expend themselves. And this is proven for lots of people that I know, because I guess after a while you just get into like the clique of self-employed people, and you know people who are entrepreneurs or whatever the thing is, and lots of people have said, I'm just giving up my office, I'm not going to go back to it, I'm not going to have my shop, I'm going to move online and sell online, because this has forced me to adapt in a way I never anticipated. I'm not arguing for the closure of the high street. I think it increases the potential for competition, and that is, I think, always a good thing. But also for people who are in office jobs and, you know, salaried, and who maybe have access needs that have not been taken seriously before, and who now can not be told, no, I'm sorry, it just won't work if you work from home, because like fuck that, they can do their job just as and save themselves the whatever the reason, the cost of the travel to their office, or to, you know, the presenteeism is like it's such a insidious, horrible element of office work, and I remember that from my own corporate life. And so I think it really encourages people to be measured upon their performance too, which is great, to weed out those assholes here which are just coasting on being at their desk for 20 years. But then that's my experience. I'm getting a bit too
No, it's true. But it's also, I think, fantastic for working parents.
Yes.
And they are saying, you know, specifically, you know, women are getting kind of basically have got an extra part-time job on their plate. And it isn't just women, I know, but it is about the question of how work is not particularly conducive to having children. And or just the timetable for children is very at odds with the expectations of people in a job, you know. And if school finishes at 3, then what the hell? Like, how the hell do you do that, you know? And so I think that it is those kind of things. It's just kind of, you can do work from 9 till 10 in the evening when your kids have gone to sleep, then you can leave early, or you can start earlier in the day, you know, and these things can be all achievable. And it's been proven with the whole, with COVID and the way everybody's gone online.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point, because if I think back to my own experience of being in the corporate world, like not being able to work, and maybe for women who are lone parents too, like not being able to work means you can't feed that child. And for me, in my, certainly in my first marriage, being the breadwinner, as it were. Mm. Like there was no option that I would be able to stop work to have a child or whatever, because otherwise there wouldn't have been no life. And so and then coupled that with my like childhood money consciousness, yeah. There was, you know, this, I think the freedom of being able to figure out a different way, and if that means working from home, and it often does in some other way, gives people the freedom to make a different choice in terms of their family. Like, I don't have any children, but that has definitely played into my decision making. That it just couldn't work financially. Mm. It just couldn't work and take the time away or whatever. So there will be things that come out of COVID. Well, there already are things that have come out of COVID that will be positive for our society, but it's going to take us a while to get past the trauma of the loss,
yeah.
Not just of people, but of hopes and plans and experiences that once that's passed, perhaps we'll be able to see how we live differently. But it's a process.
Yeah, for sure. How have you built a community in real life around you? There's nothing wrong with online, and you and I are fast Marmite friends, but I just mean, you know, like actually in getting out and putting the language to test, but also, and or not even French, maybe English people too, but meeting people and being a part of the community around you.
It's extremely hard. It's like a little bit, for me anyway, it was a bit like being at school again, in terms of the, will I be accepted, won't I? I obviously really like talking to people, otherwise I'd be, well, maybe it's not obvious, I really like talking to people, otherwise I'd be absolutely terrible at my job.
Like, she doesn't say much.
She doesn't really like me. So I naturally... And my propensity to, like, my previous propensity to, like, learn French through any means when I was in the UK and have a rudimentary grasp of French when I got here meant that I was probably more, I was and am probably more keen to integrate than some people. But that said, like, I'm an enormously introverted, so there's this real struggle in me to be like, I love you, I want to be with you, but keep away 3 days a week because I need to be on my own. And I really fight that. I miss people, but at the same time I really don't want to see them. And I think living here is the sort of embodiment of that conflict, that struggle that I have within myself. Like, I live in the middle of nowhere in a country that right now is very difficult to then see my friends who live all over the world. But in terms of, I also live out of the bit. I'm looking over my shoulder, right? Because I'm like, there's the town is behind me. I don't live in the village that I live in. I live in a hamlet outside of it. And I chose that purposefully because the integration that I do for my personality type, knowing myself as I do now and the many hundreds of hours of therapy that I have had, I need to be able to do it on my terms. Mm-hmm. And have a place to retreat to when I am overwhelmed by that. So I tend to, in terms of in answering your question, I tend to throw myself completely into many things at once, social things at once, get enormously drained by those things and run away, and then do that on repeat. And when we first arrived, I did lots of things at once. And over time, I've sort of learned to do fewer things, or to only do the things that really make me feel good, as opposed to where I think I should be doing stuff, or it would be good to see this group of people because, I don't know, they speak English and they don't speak French very well, and maybe I can help them or whatever the thing is. I'm constantly learning about myself and how to manage the things I want with the things, balance that with the things that I need. It's really hard because there's not much, certainly where I am is really French, so there's not much... like everyone who lives here, the French people are adorable, so friendly, and very keen to include us and welcome us. But it's at the beginning, it's really difficult because if you don't speak enough to make yourself understood, let alone speak enough to let your personality be understood, that is a barrier. There's an enormous barrier. But we were very lucky. So we moved here. And then 2 weeks after we moved here, I was like, to my husband, I was like, we're going to French lessons now. And so within 14 days of arriving in France, we started learning French, like forming a class. But it was useful because it gave us a network of people straight away. Yeah. And not just English people. We met some French friends through our French teacher at the time, and they lived in our village. And so we spent a huge amount of time getting pissed with them and just muddling our way through.
It makes it a little easier with some wine, doesn't it? You're like, well, I'll just give it a go.
The problem is the confidence goes up, but the comprehension goes down. The mixture, I was going to speak French now, the mixture of languages is so natural now.
It's weird, isn't it, to be in between the two.
It is. All the time, certainly at home, we will just say French words when they seem to fit better, or if I've just forgotten the English one, or it comes. So, for example, I think through painful experience of buying a trailer here in France, like the word for trailer in French is the word that I use. So I forget the word trailer constantly. I never use it, and I only use the French word for it. So when we...
You mean remorque? Yes. You mean trailer like that? Okay.
Yeah. So when we go, if we're going out, like if we're going to the tip or something, we will say, where is it? Or, you know, we won't ever speak any English about that. But I remember distinctly when my husband was, when we were moving over, and I was like, join all these Facebook groups because we have to know everything, because that's who I am. And he's like, no, just get there and it'll be fine.
Have a glass of wine, chill out, it's going to be okay.
Yeah. We found a way to make that work between the two of us. But he, I remember him saying, oh, these people are so pretentious when they interject with their French words. And they'd be like, I don't know, are they maison or potager or something? Like, they're basic, but they seem to fit better in my head when I'm describing something. And now we are those people, because it's like every fourth word is French. And
sometimes it's just the word that comes, the first word that comes, isn't it? The French one. And then with my husband, we now do complicated jokes that are bilingual and just running jokes now, you know, like one word in French that will remind you of something in English, and then you just go back and forth, and then you basically create this world in between the two. Tell me, have you managed to find a hairdresser that you like?
Okay, I don't know is the short answer to you, because I cut my own hair. This is not because I am like so money saving that I do it myself.
So it's not a frugal choice.
No, it's not. It's just I've had a lot of different haircuts over the years, and this is the one that is, it just goes up and down. So actually,
the reason I'm asking, by the way, I just want to let everybody know, is that because you have a fringe.
Oh yeah.
And that needs maintenance, isn't it? So
And actually Graham cut my hair the other day. It's just long. It just goes long and short. We just decide arbitrarily, depending upon the season, what it's gonna look like. And I don't dye it anymore or anything. So it is what it is. We just cut it the other day and threw it in the hedge. So it's really not a very refined process. The birds like it.
Really? You threw it in the hedge?
Yeah.
You give it to for birds to make nests. Got it.
Yeah, not to eat. I mean,
right. I was like, what is going on?
They don't need the
produce. No, no. I understand. Totally understand. I burnt my hair when I shaved it off.
Ah, really?
That was it. Yes, it was very...
ceremonial.
Well, it was a bit, yeah. I just felt so much lighter, emotionally lighter. Mm. Just got rid of it all, and it was really necessary, I think.
I had a haircut, I think the last haircut I ever had by someone who had the title of hairdresser was in London, in Dalston. Like, I was paying for this haircut. And it was a lovely, really a delightful French girl who cut it. And it was in a very hipster salon. But it was just, like, it was so short. It was a bob. It was so short, and it just looked like I was a flapper, but like with none of the body that a flapper needs. And I was about to the next day go on holiday, so it was like there was no recovery that I could do. I just had to go to Berlin and be like, sorry guys, this is how, but unfortunately in Berlin that was quite, it was quite fashionable, but that was not the intention. And I just grew that out and I was like, I'm not going to do that to myself anymore. I think I'm just going to sort it out. But in a French village, like even here where we've got absolutely shit all, there's like three hairdressers.
Yeah. All with puns on their names, right?
Oh yeah.
They love a good hairdresser pun. They can't just call it, you know, Maxine's. It's just like, it's pun central. You're like, whoa. So just a minute ago, you talked about seasonal. And I was wondering if, do you feel that you live more seasonally now you live in the middle of nowhere in France?
If I could, I mean, if it weren't so disruptive, I would bang my fist on the table and say, I have no choice.
All right. Yeah, that's it. It's not available, is it?
There is no option of ignoring here. So it's just, and it's brilliant in a way, in its own way, because you really notice the time passing and there's certain jobs that have to be done. So like, the end of September, we were like, okay, we've definitely got to do these, paint these shutters and all these jobs that come out. Like, they have to be done because we will suffer if the house will suffer or something bad will happen if we don't do them. And it's not just because we do more gardening here or that we have more garden, but I think even the food you can get in shops is so seasonal here compared to the UK that I'm just thinking, like, going into a supermarket looking for a fresh cauliflower in, I don't know what month it would be when it's not available, August, July, I have no concept of that. But you just, you look around, it's like, it's not here. Okay, that's just a thing. It's not like it's sold out. It's just, no, guys,
yeah.
You know, you need to understand the world doesn't work like that.
You can't have everything you want when you want it.
No, if you must be one of those people, go to the freezer section and that's fine.
Or Paris.
Yeah. but here, no, you just, you can't avoid the seasons. And in an uninsulated house, I would say that we're slightly more privy to the changing of the seasons than other people. And it is really good, but you do have to have your wits about you. And there's like, I'm a total Google Calendar fiend at the best of times, but there'll be things in it like, by this date we must have done this job. Like after that, there's no, you know, you've got to do whatever the thing is. You've got to have ordered your wood by now and stacked it because otherwise, it's going to be wet. You're going to be cold.
When I first moved here, we lived in this tiny little house, and then we found a bigger house, you know, the classic beautiful French country house. And we had this the central heating was the granule, you know, the granules of the wood chip, right? And you have to go and you have to buy the sacks, and then you have to put them in the machine, and then that's, you know, oh, Jesus. And it was all really quaint, apart from Jesus Christ, you have to just keep, imagine you have to keep filling up your central heating system with water. You know what I mean? Like, that would be, and if you don't do it, it just stops working.
I'm just still stumbling over the word central heating because we don't use that.
Yeah, now I live in this kind of more modern house we've been in, and I'm like, oh, thank the Lord. It's like being in the first world with gas plumbed into your house, you know. Before it was gas bottles. You've got gas bottles, haven't you?
We've got gas bottle for our hob, which is like one of the tiny little cube ones because our cupboard is so small, so you can cook like three eggs and you're like, no guys, you're done, get down to super. So we've got that little camping gas, and then we've got fuel heating here, but we don't use it because it's so inefficient. So I'm looking at my repurposed radiator, which it's actually just got lamps on it and pens and like pots of stuff, because we don't use our central heating at all. It's turned off. So we have one wood burner in our house at the moment. So it's pretty nippy.
Just October.
But we bought from one of the hard discount retailers last week, we bought a little in-house Meteo station that tells you the temperature in all your rooms, because we were like, how cold is this house?
How hardy are we?
I'm wearing a scarf right now, and I'm in my office, but it's pretty cold. I'll do one story at once. We bought this little station, and so it tells you the humidity and the temperature in four different places of your home. And we've become addicted to checking this machine that is in our lounge, and we're like, is the temperature in the loft 87%? No, is the humidity 87%? And outside it's 89. Okay, we've got a saving here. That's good.
So, oh my God.
I mean, like, it's literally pouring down. The air is liquid outside. Like, it's when it's raining, it's like 93%. And we're like, the carve is 92%. Doing good. So we need to do some more stuff. But we just had our carve insulated.
You did the Euro thing. We did that, for our garage.
It's really good. I don't know if I'm made. I mean, maybe it would be colder. It doesn't feel like the floor doesn't feel cold anymore. But we have a well underneath this room that I'm in, so built into the ground. And so it's a really humid carve.
Yeah,
and,
wet.
But it's pretty good. We've got an absolute shit ton of cava and wine from Noz in there. It's like we're filling it up. By the time we're done, it will be so full of stuff that it won't be able to get humid or cold in there. When we moved in, it was just, everything was covered in lino. Every room was covered in lino, and we were like, why is, we've got chestnut floorboards, so it's super nice, but we're like, why would these crazy people be covering up the floor? And it turns out it's because it's fucking freezing, and really damp. And so when we allowed the house to breathe, we allowed the spores to come with it and all this stuff. So insulation is definitely really high on the list of jobs to be done. And we're going to, before this Christmas, we'll have insulated the loft. The weather station's going to say something different, and I can't wait to run into the lounge like Christmas morning and check it every day like I am now. This is how exciting my life is. Live seasonally. I've got the weather in my lounge. Like, I'm so connected with it now.
You are so connected.
But our friends really take the piss out of us for having an app for everything. So my husband and I both used to work in IT.
Yeah.
And we both, we like tech. So we've got an automatic chicken door opener on our chicken. Because I can't be bothered to get up there at like 5 a.m. like, I don't want them to suffer, they don't want me to suffer. That's why the world created an automatic chicken door. So they've got that, and then I've got a cat flap that I can lock remotely and tells me which pet's gone through it, and like that.
You're like CIA of your house.
I will post stuff on my Frugal Facebook or the blog or something, and I'll occasionally get someone go, that's not very frugal, you could have got this for cheaper, or you could have gone without, or you could have just left your fucking door open. I'm like, I don't want to live in misery. Like, I am making an executive decision over which of the electronic cat flaps I'm going to have, and that is the end of it. And I don't know if you notice this too, but like, you get the lovely mix of people who are so lovely and are like, just send you links and give you recommendations for people to get wood from or whatever the thing is. Like, they'll be so, so giving. And then you'll get, on the other side, you'll get people who are like, well, I think you'll find that if you want to do it the right way, you'll do it my way. And or anything you do, they'll be like, well, you shouldn't have done it that way. And you're like, I just moved to another country and I don't speak the language. Please let me have the day off.
Yeah. I think also, like you said, it's such a great opportunity to meet wonderful people, you know, and hey, we can all rub each other up the wrong way, and it's easily done.
For not just my community, but the world online, COVID or coronavirus has forced us all into a place where one of the main means of communication is online, and it's a stressful situation. I think that stress is coming out in the communication all over the place, and it's maybe maybe people aren't filtering in the way that they might do because they're not having enough social interaction, so they're just desperate to communicate, and so it doesn't they don't present what they want to say in a kind way or as kind a way as they might otherwise. But it's, I think, when I very first started out and when I very first started writing for the magazine, I was like super new and fresh and vulnerable, and now I'm just like, no, you can't have my tax records, step off. Like, at the beginning I would be like, oh well, maybe I should reply to this guy.
So yeah.
I think the combination of like my experience over time has made that easier, but also things will change as people get back to their normal lives, I think, and people will be less abrasive or less stressed. In the community generally, like, I find everyone's still super lovely, and it's really easy to make friends online, much more easy than it is for me anyway. It always has been for me to make friends online, because I guess
you're an introvert.
Yeah, I just, it's the place that I live. It's given me opportunities to meet people in real life. Like, for example, when I made that account in Limoges Airport, the Instagram account in Limoges Airport, after a few weeks, I think I came back and found houses again, found this house. And it ended up being so near to someone that followed me. I was like, oh, great. Well, maybe we'll see each other in the future, which is nice. But then the 2 weeks after we moved, we rocked up in our French class, and there she is, like, sat in my French class. I was like, oh, I did not stalk you. I'm so sorry. We just happened to live. Hi.
And take a deep breath. It's going to be okay.
Yeah, but we've still stayed in touch, and it's just, yeah, there's just so many, like, this particular person that I'm talking about is adorable and so lovely, and it just happens to be someone who was in the same year at the same school as my husband. So it's like, why is this?
Oh, how is this happening? That's crazy.
And so it's so many serendipitous, coincidental things happen. It's really weird to be in a place, the middle of nowhere here, and to run into someone who has those links with us and is so lovely. So it's just one example of that kind of stuff. Like,
Wow,
it's a strange community.
It's funny that actually our closest friends, they're a couple that run an eco sheet, so like dry toilets, the whole thing, but with a ventilation system. They're not like, because you say dry toilets and everyone thinks, oh god, that sounds horrific, but they've got the whole ventilation system, they're really clean. Anyway, the guy was taught English by my husband's mum. They're from the same place in the Alps. And his dad was also the dentist for my husband when he was a kid.
That's crazy.
And they ended up in the same town, pretty much. And now they're the closest friends that we have here.
That's so funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't believe in fate and signs or anything like that. And I know some people do, and that's fine, but it's just so weird to me how this stuff works out. I'm just like, okay, notice that.
Well, listen, I could ask you loads more questions, but you've been very generous with your time. Thank you so much. I'm going to ask you to come along again. I'm sure we'll have plenty more to talk about.
I will save the stories for whatever other atrocities I find in the various outbuildings of my house for the next time we speak.
Tell us all where we can find you. Where do you hang out? Instagram?
Yes. So my blog is frugalfrance.com, and my Instagram is, well, all my social media handles are at frugalfrance. And I am in the moment writing the memoir of this experience of moving to France, which I have come up with a title for, but it's going to be published next year, and it's going to be called Living a Frugal Life in France. And Amazon in the spring, I think. So
fantastic.
So that's going to be out there.
Before the launch, we'll have you back on, and you can tell us all about the many stories that you've got once you've gotten through winter.
Rolling up my sleeves, yes.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode of I Am French and would like to find out more, you can go to www.karenfrenchinfrance.com. And you can also find me on Instagram at I Am French Podcast. Merci.